Now, this is for the recording people. This is Dan Erlander, and this is our second session on St. Francis. And it's a beautiful sunny afternoon at Holden Village. Now, we're going to continue our journey now in the life of Francis. And before I get to the notes, I have a page of just comments. But does anyone have a question from last time to straighten anything up or anything? Okay. That means I was perfectly clear. Several things that are helpful as we move on in the life of Francis. But before I do that, I wanted to share a momentous change that has happened in the village teaching, and that is teachers standing up. Have you noticed, you have been here before, we always sat at a chair here, and people in the back couldn't see us. And the reason we sat there for years and years and years is that there used to be a canopy where the fire went up into the chimney, and to teach you had to be seated so people would see you. And then this canopy was removed, and then it only took about 25 years before those who teach here realized that you could stand up. I don't know what that means, but it's like, duh. Okay, a few things just to mention from last time or before we begin today. One thing I forgot to mention is how Francis, as a young person, was enamored with knights and King Arthur and King Arthur's Round Table. And also, he was a musician, as we know, especially from his song, All Creatures of Our God and King, which is a paraphrase. But he loved the songs of chivalry from King Arthur's court. And the other is that he went on trips up to France with his father, Pietro, on buying. And there he would listen to the French troubadours, and he would learn their songs, and then he would sing them himself. And also he learned up in France the poetry of knights and ladies and the courts. The other about his personality, I had written down here from before, charming, endearing, affectionate, extravagant, musical, comedian, and I might have said this last time, but he believed he would be world famous someday. He really believed that. Has anybody here thought that when you were younger? I might be giving up about now. But he really believed it. He just said, well. Also, just to mention, review from last time, his two conversions. First, his conversion at San Damiano, which is was when he saw the cross. This Byzantine cross with the figure of Christ on it, and heard a voice, we don't understand how, but heard a voice say, restore my church. And that's where he had a sense of call, but he didn't know what that call meant. And so then the second conversion, then I think in mentioning last night at Vespers, was going to the church and hearing Matthew 10 read. And it just dawned on him, I will follow that literally. And he did his whole life. For example, if you remember Matthew 10, you take no purse. Never, ever did he carry a pouch. Because if you had a pouch, you had something. again. So never a pouch, as Jesus instructed, and no sandals, which is only in Matthew, no sandals, and never in his rest of his life, including the winters, which can be very cold, and the roads full of rocks, he never wore anything on his feet, because his conversion was to follow Matthew 10 exactly. So that was, as Jesus called those disciples, now Francis had heard the call for him to join them. Personality, just some words, sunny, humble, charming, and one who brought joy to sad hearts. And this was very, very unusual, because there were prophets, because of the depravity and the corruption of the church and the local priests, there were many prophets coming up in response to this. And if they had one thing in common, all these prophets were crabby. Because the church was so bad, so it was to go and preach and harangue and pronounce judgment on the church. And while they were doing this, Francis is dancing around, singing, going into a town, providing music and comedy, bringing the people together, and then preaching the gospel to them and calling them to follow. The other unusual thing about him, no matter how corrupt the church is, Francis chooses to be a faithful son of the church. This is where I got my idea for the anti-crabbiness movement in the ELCA. If you want to join, all you have to do is say to yourself, I am now part of the ELCA, or Methodist, or whatever anti-crabbiness movement. His dream that he received to go and preach the gospel according to Matthew 10, this dream he knew, as Jesus knew, would only be fulfilled by community. Jesus and the disciples, now Francis and his followers. And I, just to get the sense of the variety, these are his very first followers. Bernardo, a rich merchant, Peter, a jurist and a church lawyer, Giles, a peasant farmer, totally uneducated, Sylvester, a priest, and then John the Simple, who never knew what was going on, but somehow really loved being with these people, and died at age 18. It was the first really grief in this family. Angelo, a former knight, and then Maceo, Juniper, and Rufino, and then on and on and on until there were thousands and thousands of what they called the Little Brothers. They were from all divisions of society, a community of equals, totally rejected any kind of hierarchy, and rejected violence. This was a pacifist movement following the way of Matthew in the Beatitudes. And then later, Sister Claire, if you remember the movie Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, anybody remember that? Three. Yeah, sometime it'd be fun. It's old. And it's very idealized and very romanticized. It begins with Francis and Claire as young people dancing around in the flowers outside of Assisi. But it's very charming. The problem of, what is it? The problem with it is that Francis, I think, was 12 years older than Claire. And the way Claire bonded to Francis was not getting to know him on the streets of Assisi, but every time he preached in the church of the church where they worship San Rufino, every time he preached, she was there and listened to his words, and she was converted. And it's a dramatic story of her conversion, because she was from one of the wealthiest family of the nobility. And a husband had already been picked out for her. And in order to follow Francis, she had to escape from her home at night. And then by the time they found her, she had already, Francis had shaved her head completely, which was a sign even to her family that there is no turning back. And that was a very dramatic night, because they were out looking for her. And this happened again at the San Damiano church. And then Agnes, her younger sister, also escaped. And then the family decided to use force to take her back. And they tried, and it's a long story, but they failed. So she was the second then of what would become a movement throughout all Europe and beyond of what are called the Poor Clares. When Francis and his followers began, it wasn't like going out into the world and everybody is happy with you. They were considered fools, and they were considered fanatics. And they'd go into a town, and people would throw things at them and laugh at them and scoff at them. And this is where nonviolence, which they had learned from the teachings of Jesus, really happened, is to respond to that with continuing to be joyful, and then reaching out to those people in love that were scoffing at them. One writer said they received many more insults than alms. Then just another word about the church. Innocent III was the pope at this time, and this was the very, very high point of papal power in the world through all the centuries. The papal court, as we will get to in our story today, the papal court would have been like the courtroom of a great monarch. And the armies of the pope were stronger than any of the armies of the nations. It would have been magnificent to see the court of Innocent. Is Innocent the Third? Isn't that a name? Hi, I'm Innocent. The scandals in the church, so common, not only spiritual poverty, but moral and faith of the people of the church was on par with the immorality of the pastors and the priests and the bishops. So this produced, again, many of the rebellion groups. And the most popular one at that time that formed little religious communities and had to hide because of the power of the church, and they had different names. And the largest of them that built chapels and houses all over the Europe, southern of Europe, I think it would be right. They were, the Cathars were the largest, and they followed very much Greek Hellenistic body is evil, soul is good, material is evil, evil, spiritual is good. They were really a revival of ancient Gnosticism, and they were also very much persecuted. So that's I didn't plan that. Now, let's talk a little about the peacemaking of the early Franciscans. Jesus' words about love your enemies for them was not a passive way of just enduring suffering that comes from people, but it was an active form of peacemaking. And Francis taught the followers to Jesus' form of peacemaking, and it is the ministry of surprise. That is, someone brings violence against you, and you respond with love. And then to find out the power of that love and also the risk of that kind of love. Very early, the brothers were robbed by, known through the years as the three robbers. And then the brother who had been a soldier decides to try to beat them. And I forgot completely the story that Francis told him to go out and look and find them and then bring them back so we can share a meal with them. And all three of the robbers became Franciscans, which they weren't called at that time, but all three of them became part of the order. So this is the power that they had. Not only was this power for the brothers and the followers of Claire, but Francis also founded the Third Order, which was an order for lay people that would still be in families and be married, but they would be and have jobs, but they would be supportive of the brothers and the what are later called the poor Clares. They would be supportive of them and also make a promise of nonviolence and a promise of peacemaking and
poverty.
Yeah, and living for them, it would be what we would call today living simply. They still kept jobs and work, but to live very simply and give to the poor. And there's still a third order. Has anyone met a lay person in the Catholic Church today that's a poor Claire?
I actually was preparing to enter the third order.
Oh yeah, what was that like?
It was wonderful while I was in New Zealand because it was very cohesive and a wonderful network, but I came to this country and all of a sudden it was red tape everywhere and I thought, no, this isn't good. So I think it just depends on the community.
Yeah, there was red tape too.
Yeah, I had to jump through a lot of hoops. So.
A lot of rules and entrance or center. Yeah.
But that was just my experience. I don't think that's necessarily everything.
And it might differ, I suppose, in different places. Mm-hmm. And one word about missions. For Francis, his great desire was to bring the Muslims to faith in Jesus Christ. And he believed that if you ended the immorality and the corruption of the Christian church and preached the simple gospel to the Muslims, that they would convert. Francis had such a burden to convert the Muslims, he tried a number of times, and every time he failed. He was on his way to Syria to preach to the Muslims, and there was a storm, and the ship never made it. He tried once to walk to the Moors in Spain and preach to them, and he became sick along the way and had to turn around. And then we'll get later to his going to Egypt and preaching to the Sultan. We're going to hold that for later. Now, now I'm lost. Let's see, where do I go from?
Is the third order also called Poor Clares?
No, the Poor Clares are the women's order of Franciscans.
What's the third one called that families can join?
I think it's called the Third Order. The Third Order. So, any other? I have to tell you sometime on this that we up here at Holden got to know the only Lutheran Franciscan in the United States. And one of these times I'll tell you about him now. I gotta go to Idaho. To gather a group around him, Francis would be very much in danger of the violent power of the church, because the church and the papacy were very, very afraid that more new groups would begin that would turn against the church. And there would have been suspicion as they see a whole group of followers and they're growing. And so Francis realizes we must go to Rome and get the approval of the powerful Innocent III for an order. And to receive approval, one would give to the Pope the rules of your order. So they take that with them, and now the brothers who are somewhere in the teens, age-wise, young men, begin their trek to Rome from Assisi, and rocky roads, and they're all in bare feet. And they're singing along the way, and they reach Rome. And here, the glory, we have to again remind ourselves of the glory of the church. They bring their rule, and first of all, it's very hard for them to get an invitation even to meet the Pope. When they do, they are given a chilly reception. There's one story that probably developed later, but imagine in this one of the most grand courts of all European world at that time, and in walks these motley group that have just a peasant's robe, bare feet, they're dirty from the trip. And they walk into this palace. And so there's one story that developed later because it and I'm going to tell it because I think it's funny. The Pope looks at them, a chilly reception, and then decides to laugh at them. And then he orders them, go find some pigs to preach to. So the story goes that Francis, always obedient to the church hierarchy, so they went and found a pig pen in Rome, and then Francis jumped in, and then he put mud and other pig poop. Poop isn't a good word. Pig poop all over him. And then they were to return the next day, so he did, and said to the Pope, I have obeyed, now grant my request to be an order of the church. Now, the Pope granted now another hearing. Maybe he cleaned up first, I don't know. We don't even know if this happened. Before the Pope and the Cardinals now, Francis explains his program, the gospel texts, and his ideas for a rule of the order. And the Cardinals just cry out in protest to the Pope, and their main reason is this is unrealistic, to follow Jesus so closely that you give up everything in total poverty and begging and not even a place to live. So this was unrealistic. Now, there's a hero that comes here, and that hero is Cardinal John of St. Paul, who was one of the cardinals of the church at that time, whose heart had been touched by the witness of Francis and the brothers. And then the next day when they return, and again the cardinals are arguing about this and bringing up the reason to refuse Francis. And Cardinal John of St. Paul evidently had read the Gospels. And he said, and this is a quote we still know, if we reject this poor man's request on such a pretext, and the pretext is that it's totally unrealistic, would this not be to declare the gospel cannot be practiced and so to blaspheme Christ, its author? And this hit the cardinals and the Pope with such power. Again, in the midst of all the glory and glamour and wealth and riches, pointing them to Jesus. And then they come back for a third meeting, and there the Pope verbally approves the rule. There's a story that also that night he had a dream, and the dream was the entire church was tipping over to collapse, and one little monk was holding it up. So that might have also encouraged the Pope. Verbally approves the rule. And on the way back to Assisi, they just start dancing and singing that now we are recognized order of the church. And as they're dancing, one of them says, oops, we forgot to get this in writing. Which always was the case with an order that's approved. But then they decided to trust that the words of the Pope they could believe, which was true. They settled in Rivo Torto, the crooked stream, in just a little shack here, and that's where the dream of a new life in Jesus Christ started. Sometimes these are called the good old days of the order, where they lived just in total poverty, going out and begging to receive from the rich and give to the poor, going out from there preaching. And again, what was so striking to people, at first people made fun of them, but more and more they realized these people are not grumpy. And so they began to listen to them. And this is when the Franciscan movement just flourishes. And so now, I want to just share a few words about Arrivo Torto and their life together there. Francis was the mother. They called him mother. He was like a mother hen to this group of followers. He teaches humility and simplicity. He teaches them the courage to beg, and never was to beg for themselves, but to beg in order to give money or food to the wretched poor. They hired themselves out as day laborers, and then would use the money from that to buy food for the poor. And from the very, very beginning, it was to do what nobody would ever do, and that is to care for lepers. To go to the leprosariums, which were many, and to clean the wounds of the lepers, and to bring them comfort and bring them consolation. And then go into the villages and preach. And again, this was surprise because so many preachers came through these villages who cried out against the corruption of the church. And so when these happy, sunny, singing, music-making, chameleon prophets would come, they would listen. Now, Francis believed totally in nonviolence. And so a poor peasant riding on a donkey came into a rival Torto and just announced that this area belonged to him. And Francis, you would never argue with somebody. If they wanted your cloak, you give them their cloak. If they want the land where you're living on, you give it to them. So the brothers just walked away. And now where do they go? Where do they go? The Benedictines have a monastery near Assisi, and then it's Porticola is a little chapel that has some buildings, and the chapel is St. Mary's, and then this is where the brothers settle now. They're guests of the Benedictine order of monks. So, now, the spread of the order now, and then I want to stop. We go until
5:15.
Okay. Francis and Clare, there's never been two souls in history, some have said this, that were more in accord. Clare became what do you call the sisters who are confined and never leave?
Cloistered.
Oh yeah, cloistered. She becomes cloistered, and Francis and Claire. It's guesses, but the story is that she had a window that was barred, and Francis would come to that little window, had to stand on his tiptoes and talk to Claire. But they were as close spiritually as two people could ever be. The order spreads all over North and Central Italy, Southern France, Spain. Now the order is favored, no more ridicule. And people, though, continue to ask why they are not crying out against the church. And they win the hearts of the people by not fighting the church and by their poverty and their lack of greed. And soon now, when the group comes to a little town, the people just cry out, Ecco il Santo, which means the saint is here. The saint is here. Okay, I'm going to invite you to just share some thoughts now for a few minutes, and then we'll move on with the story. Anybody? Is this fun? I hope.
I found it fascinating, and I'd never heard before this hospitality the Benedictines offered them at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And I don't really, do you know any more about that? Like, was that a long-standing monastery, and
no.
Francis keep some kind of a relationship with other orders at the time? Because I haven't really thought about that. Like, what relationship did they have to the older existing orders?
Yeah, you know, in my reading, I just haven't read that much, and obviously there was no great tension.
Yeah. Did they host them in their monastery? Is that what they did?
There are some indications, like when the Agnes was running from her family, she found safety in the Benedictine monastery. So there's evidence throughout the life of a connection to the Benedictines. At one time, the Pope really tried to push them to just become Benedictines. They decided there didn't need to be another order, which they resisted. Because Francis resisted every attempt to compromise what's called the early order.
The other thing I wanted to say is I have a cool photograph of Francis and his brothers before Innocent III. So maybe at the end of our time, I could put the picture up on the screen. It's a powerful picture of their humility in front of this grand, like you described it, this grand palace.
And someone has said that picture is the most profound artistic comparison of the theology of the cross and the theology of glory. And part of our sharing here, when to move up in history, it was Luther that rediscovered it in a different way, that rediscovered the theology of the cross. So should I tell you about 3 minutes before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan, maybe somewhat amusing, but this text came up last month, and you know I'm at Spanway Lutheran Church. Arnie is the pastor. I remember many, many times that you were there. When he read the text, he said, the one about the sandals and the bag and the purse, he said that this is the earliest recorded instructions of how to prepare to go through airport security. And I began thinking, hearing you, that maybe we have to all become Franciscans in order to travel.
Reminds me of a cartoon that a nude couple in mind, and they're explaining to the couple next to them, we've just found this to be much easier.
As I recall, there was a split between the spiritual Franciscans and the, didn't the order that eventually arose after his death, it was not as strict as his hopes for it, was it?
We'll see that Francis' dream of, called it evangelical poverty, which was completely nothing, to own absolutely nothing, not even books. The exception to that is they had one Bible. But the story is a beggar came for food and they had no food, and Francis had to give the beggar something. So the other brothers came back, you gave the Bible? this will be the tension we will look at that eventually leads to what is traditionally called the crucifixion of Francis. So that's where we're going. Yeah, but you're very right. You know, and the main leader of this was, as I said, the least Franciscan of all Franciscans, Brother Elias. So Mr. Realistic. So,
is the group that is known in Minnesota, and I don't know if it's, I thought it came from France, but it's called the Little Brothers Friends of the Poor, and now it's called Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly in Minnesota. And I'm wondering if this is part of a branch, an offshoot kind of from, and I thought it had started in France. Yeah. And they are active in the Twin Cities area at taking care of visiting and having them for meals and so forth. It is the elderly and kind of the elderly poor. I think they've changed their name, but I think it's a very well thought of organization, at least there in Minnesota. I don't know if it's nationwide or not, or if it's a local organization, but I'm under the impression that it does stem through the Catholic Church, and I don't know the beginning.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Can you Google from Holden?
Yes.
So Brothers of the Poor?
Little Brothers Friends of the Poor, and now it's called Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly, but it's still kind of, it's people who are living in isolation, who don't have families, who are both pretty much elderly and poor, and they find people, and they manage to find a lot of volunteers who bring them in for meals, visit them. It's a non-profit organization. It's rather small, but I think a very good organization.
Sure. Would you Google that?
Sure.
Right now? Can you do it right here?
Oh, no.
This is a new book. Never thought of it when you're a teacher and you're asked a question.
And I
have a Googler. any other?
It is on Google, Dan. Is that what you wanted to know?
Yeah.
While he's waiting, I would make another comment that in the June issue of The Lutheran, which is a magazine of the ELCA, there's a sizable segment explaining about the movement going on called the Emergent Church. And in fact, there's quotations there from a seminary professor of ELCA that had taken a sabbatical in order to write a book about that, and in which he points out how for a number of years, perhaps it's been 10 years, this has been starting up and showing up in the teaching of the seminaries. And I'm wondering whether a part of that would actually tolerate a gathering of people that you could call a community, you could even call them a church, without a building. And this could happen in our lifetime. Wouldn't that be a radical?
Yeah, I think it might happen. So it'll be interesting to follow the group, what's called the Emerging Church. I'd like to explain a basic teaching of Francis and what gave him the power to carry on his dream. And this was, remember, his going to France with his father and learning about the ways of the court and King Arthur. And from this, he received a beautiful word that in Italian is cortesia. Cortesia, C-O-R-T-E-S-I-A, I think. And cortesia was this in like a medieval court with knights and ladies and all the parts of the court. The rule was that the entire court would practice cortesia. And that means that everyone in the court would treat the others with courtesy. Everyone in the court would be servant to the others. Everyone in the court would affirm the others. And it would be, so cortesia is like to walk to everyone in the court, you know, and say, I honor you, cortesia. Then Francis now has taken the word from the medieval court, and he sees the entire universe as a court. And then his dream is that in the entire universe, every part will treat every other part with cortesia. And so this is what led him to his understanding of relating to nature and to animals, that we treat every part with deep, deep courtesy. And the other thing that he learned from animals, and especially the birds, is that well, Jesus said this, the birds never store up in the barns. Is that in the Bible?
Yes.
Okay. They neither sow nor reap, and yet your Heavenly Father feeds them. And the goal of a Franciscan would be to become like the animals, where you depend daily on your food. And don't fuss and work and on to gather up for yourself. So those are some of the background in his life that led him to where it was really from Jesus, consider the lilies of the field, the birds of the air. Don't ask me how you would transfer this to contemporary America. That's always that's a struggle, isn't it? So we'll have time to talk about that.
Dan, that sounds a little bit like Thoreau.
The what?
That sounds, your little description you just gave then, where you don't just sort of let things happen,
sounds like Thoreau, who wrote a big book about it called Walden, that you just sort of let, you remember?
Yeah.
He could, but it always bothered me dreadfully in his case, because when he needed to make a garden, he went and borrowed the shovel from the people in town. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit hard to put it into practice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it certainly, it was the dream of, and yeah, and that's, it's a struggle for us, as you know, how do you take these beautiful teachings and then not see them as sacrifice, but see them as gift, and then as grace. Anybody? Okay. This now, leading Francis of Cortesia with all the animals. Some of his brothers would get frustrated with him because it took them so long to get any place. One of the reasons was that while they were walking down the path to another town, Francis had to pick all the worms up off of the road and put them on the side so the wagons coming by wouldn't run. This could be boring after a while. Francis felt sorry for the bees in the winter, and he would warm honey and wine then to give to the bees. And so we get to his connection now to the world of animals. Did anyone see the film Horse Whisperer? And then in Seattle this year, we had stories about, in Seattle, a dog whisperer, and showed him on television relating to dogs. And that's where probably the Francis was an animal whisperer. He would be able to relate to an animal that somehow was just right to establish the relationship. And I was out jogging once when we lived in Tacoma, and this angry dog came out of a bush. I was on my bicycle, and I saw the dog running towards me. And so I got off of my bicycle and got down on the level of the dog and gave him a kind look as he came and bit my arm. And then our relationship developed. After biting me, he rolled over and wanted his tummy rubbed. So I rubbed his tummy, and every time I took my hand on him, he would turn into angry teeth and growling. So I was just sitting taken up again. So I think one of us finally got tired or something. But all of us don't have this gift. But Francis did. One of the most famous stories of Francis is the Wolf of Gubbio, which the story goes that the wolf was actually killing people in this little town in Italy that I think today has a statue of the wolf not far from Assisi, and how Francis had a talk with the wolf and explained to him and made a deal with the wolf that if he would stop attacking people, that the people would put out food for him every day for the rest of his life. And they reached an agreement, and the wolf of Gubbio became a friend of everyone in this little town. My mistake was to get down, because then a dog whisperer would tell you that you get down on the same level, you then lose the dominance. Is it? I see a head nodding. So the next time I can try that. Okay. Just, let's few minutes left.
I think I should put it up at the beginning of your next class, because I have my little adapter.
Okay.
And then you can just comment on the picture when you get started.
Okay.
Will that work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. I'm tell you, first of all, that the Order of St. Francis was much more than being kind to animals, which they were, but it was really a missionary movement to walk into towns and be joyful and to sing and to entertain and to reach out and to beg from the rich to give to the poor. And they, at first, the response was a lot of hostility, flogging, and one of the reasons was that they had no official papers that they were an order approved by the papacy. Because in order to do that, to carry that, you'd have to have a pouch, right? And then, and you'd also then have the backing of worldly power. And so at first, until their reputation spread, they received a lot of hostility. And it was one of the later of the breakdown between Francis and most of his brothers. It was over saving yourself from danger on the road by having an official paper with you. One should go out like the first disciples, totally vulnerable. And this order now, both the Franciscans and the Clares, they weren't called that at that time, both of them just start growing and growing until it's hundreds. And then it's thousands now who are so touched by these people that they join. And then teaching from Francis, they start spreading out. And not too many years after the beginning, they have reached preaching missions now to Bohemia, Poland, Romania, England, and Norway, which I think is interesting. They'd had to go through Sweden or around it or something. They must have given up. But mission then to the Muslim lands that again Francis tries, and again he is turned back by illness. There was something happened that every time he tried to go and convert Muslims, he either got sick or turned back in some other way or had a shipwreck. So so now they are a missionary movement. And from the missionary movement, hundreds of more become Franciscans. And then also, in all of these different countries, there are lay people that join the Third Order. And now the problem with this that we'll pick up tomorrow is this takes administration. You know, you just, Francis was not organized. So we'll pick up there with the thousands now of brothers, and there's also equal growth among the women. So we have time, so we'll start tomorrow with the structuring of the Franciscan movement. So any other comments before in the last minute?
Are you going to talk any more about what he did? You said he was not successful, but what he did to try to talk to the Muslims. I mean, that's so pertinent for today with what's going on. have any more stories and more information about that?
Yeah, that's my, that's going to be my grand,
okay.
Grand
finale.
Not, it's a little before the finale.
Okay, thank you.
Because I think it's, one of the most touching and beautiful and pertinent to our times. I had this very personally that I was teaching Francis in, oh, I forgot, one of the suburbs of Minneapolis, to a congregation there, and I told the pastor that I'd be teaching about Francis and Islam. And lo and behold, the pastor invited mosque, and the imam came to the class, and also one of the lay leaders, and they were touched. I could see it on their faces, you know, and the fellowship we had afterwards, and the lay people in that church that welcomed them and talked to them about when can we meet again together. And I don't know why in this time that this story has not been told. I think it's too hard to hear because it seems to go against Matthew 28. And we'll share, this is to whet your appetite, we'll share how Francis interpreted the scriptures in a very Lutheran way, only that hasn't been invented yet. There's some real connections of how in that instance he chose to interpret scripture. So, well, thank you, and we will.
Thank you.